My next guest is bringing a subject and an expertise to home that I truly love. Megan Sheldon is a cultural mythologist and brand strategist, and we're going to spend the next half hour learning what that means. Her website, narrativecommunications.com, is a fascinating site. And now Megan joins us to share her own narrative. Welcome, Megan.
Hi, Jenna. Nice to meet you.
It's so nice to meet you.
Yeah.
I just think we share so much shared love of mythology. And let's begin with defining mythology. Some people describe a myth as not being real. Help us understand, Megan, what mythology is and what it isn't.
For me, it's not about being real or not real. It's about being universal. It's about looking at the stories that connect us, that live deep inside of us, and that make us all feel something collective and universal together, that power that runs through us.
The power that runs through us.
Yeah.
We don't spend much time in our culture looking in.
No, I think it's shifting. I think there's a shift. The fact that you and I both have an interest in myth and archetype and in the stories that surround us, and I think that power is growing, and I think we've recognized that we need to do more of it.
How did mythology become a focus in your life?
Oh, yeah. If we were to go way back, it probably started when I was quite small. I was part of a father-daughter community with my dad, and we would meet in North Vancouver and West Vancouver with other father-daughters, and we would tell First Nation stories of the landscape that surrounds us. And it was my first real introduction into the myths that mattered to me, looking at the mountains and the ocean and the animals around us and seeing the stories of where they came from and how they've long connected people back to nature and the places around us. Years later, when I was in my 20s, my mom introduced me to Joseph Campbell and Carl Jung and Mary Woodman and Clarissa Pinkola Estes, all these amazing archetypes and these people that were studying this Jungian philosophy that really understood why story matters. And that unleashed something in me.
The last author, Women Who Run with the Wolves, that is a profound book for many women, men too, but I think it speaks to the collective mythology of women that has not been celebrated or even explored prior to maybe recently.
Yeah, I think reading that book for my mom was quite inspirational and awakening. And the fact that she shared it with me and I read it when I was 20, it really set me on a course that I haven't been able to get off of. It's a bit of a roller coaster, but it's really understanding the feminine archetype that both men and women can hold and how that affects us, how that makes our decision-making process, how it impacts the way that we run our businesses and the friends that we make and the communities that we build.
People talk about the feminine archetype or feminine mythology or the divine feminine. It just sounds like gobbledygook to a lot of people. They don't really know what that means. And who can blame them, you know, in what has been classically a patriarchal kind of view of things. So it's not about a competition and it's not about a declaration that something's better or worse, but it is a balance.
Right.
So let's talk about the divine feminine for a minute. What does that mean to you?
Well, if we were to look at masculinity and femininity as the yin and the yang that we each hold, I think the feminine is connecting back to our emotions and our ability to, you know, our empathy and our vulnerability and the things that kind of ground us. The masculine side of us is our ambition and the things that we're striving for and that vision. So it's about having that balance of both. I don't think you want to have one or the other. You know, it really is that yin and the yang balance that makes us beautiful human beings.
The divine part of the feminine relates to emotional health, which is something that is being explored now. Emotional health, you know, before people, I think culturally we can say it's like, oh, she's such a girl or he's such a girl or he's such an old woman. If a man were to show emotion and he would be told to suck it up or just repress it or not pay attention to his feminine side. Men are tired of that too.
Yeah, definitely. And I think I was at the Board of Trade event all day today looking at women as catalyst for economic growth. And this subject came up around how women lead. And when women lead from a place of emotional vulnerability or of empathy, they're often put down from that. And same with men. I think the world that we've lived in has really elevated and celebrated the masculine more. And there is this shift back to really trying to connect with what it means to look at leadership and look at the way that we're building our communities from that feminine, divine feminine aspect.
The elevated male aspect, though, is not a true representation of the whole male. It's a very truncated part of him that's just like produce and do and use that Mars energy and go out there. And and that's not good for guys either.
Yeah, I'm married to a Swedish man, so he has a beautiful balance of both masculine and feminine. And I think that's what drew us to each other, was just recognizing that balance that we complement each other with. But I think that more and more men are recognizing that they can seek out this emotional feminine side, and that can be celebrated within them and hopefully within their culture.
Is that more prevalent in Sweden?
Definitely.
She's got a big smile on her face.
Yeah.
She just lit up. Ta-da!
Yeah. I think it's again, it comes back to what we were talking about at the Board of Trade event this morning. It comes back to a cultural value. Men and women are, for the most part, equally raising their children and equally looking at the home and family care in Sweden and in a lot of Scandinavian countries. You've got equal mat and pat leave for the most part. And if men don't take 2 months, it disappears. So you're raising generations of children, both men and women, who look to parenting as an equal task. It's not, it doesn't fall just on the woman.
Parenting is an important aspect for you right now.
Yes, with my growing belly.
Yes. I just took a picture of her in the studio and she happily pointed to her belly. Show my belly.
Yeah. Well, I have a little girl growing in me, and it's quite an amazing experience, but also wanting to bring her into a world where she feels her masculine and feminine side celebrated, and she feels that there are no glass ceilings in front of her, and that she has the ability to build a beautiful, successful career and be the type of potentially mom that she wants to be as well. So I think finding that balance, and, you know, we were referring to it this morning at the event as we have to kill the superwoman of trying to do it all and trying to, you know, to look at our business and look at the way we're raising families and look at the way we're running our homes. And we have to really share that responsibility. And that has to start with the way that we look at our businesses.
We're speaking with Megan Sheldon, cultural mythologist and brand strategist, your home on 98.3 Roundhouse Radio with Janilyn White. And we're talking about mythology. You're an entrepreneur as well. How does mythology and the love of it influence your business world?
So I started in journalism and moved towards public relations and marketing and advertising, and I felt something missing. Looking back now, I think it was that divine feminine. It was the emotional vulnerability, the idea that business should be personal. It shouldn't be something that we separate our personal lives from. I moved to Scotland and I did a master's in mythology, where I studied archetype and how we tell stories and why we tell stories and how they exist in cultures around the world. And I came home and I took all of these skills and all of these passions and I mushed them all together and out came narrative communications. And I've been running the business for 6 years now, and it's been very successful, and it's had different growth spurts and different phases. And it's just been an amazing experience to be able to go into organizations and help them understand the stories that make them meaningful, to really focus in on not just the CEO's story, but how do all of these voices come together and create what I call a tapestry. This, you know, all these voices woven together will create the brand myth, the meta narrative that exists within an organization.
So you help them break it down and understand the story they're telling, not only to the world, but to themselves.
Yeah, and it really is about future storytelling as well. So what's the story that you want your organization to tell in the future? Why are you here? Why does it matter? What is the meaning that you're going to leave behind?
The meaning you're going to leave behind. Well, we're not going to leave you behind, because we're just going to take a short break. You're home with Janilyn White at 98.3. We're speaking with Megan Sheldon, cultural mythologist and brand strategist. And she doesn't know what I'm going to do, but I'm going to do something surprising right after the break. Stay with us.
You ever have those times driving in your car?
And online at roundhouseradio.com. This is a test.
It's 5:17 on a fabulous Friday afternoon. You're home with Janilyn White at Roundhouse Radio 98.3. And we're speaking with Megan Sheldon, cultural mythologist and brand strategist. She's a businesswoman. She's a lover of story, archetype, myth. I said I was going to do something surprising. I'm going to make her wait for it. Wait for it. Because first of all, mythology is different and yet similar around the world. What are some shared mythologies that intrigue you?
After doing my master's in mythology in Scotland, I moved to Ghana, West Africa, and it was a really amazing experience because I got to host and convene young girls in storytelling circles. And it was amazing to me to realize the stories being told by them were similar to the stories being told back here in Vancouver and in Edinburgh. And I think it was just a proof, in a sense, an awakening that all of these stories do exist inside of us. And if we give them a chance to come forward and to be spoken and to be heard, I think that's the key with storytelling, is you need a story listener. You need people that respect and honor the storytelling process.
You need a witness.
You need a witness, yeah. And I think that, you know, storytelling goes so far, but bringing in the mythology, that's where we look back. We look back at the roots and the culture of where we came from. And Ghana is no stranger to deep mythology. And while living there, I got to study a lot of the mythology that existed. And wherever I've gone in the world, the trickster archetype has been my friend.
It's been, oh, coyote.
Yes, oh, coyote.
Oh, coyote.
Yeah, and in Ghana, it's Anansi, the spider. And Anansi weaves tales, and sometimes they're tales of deceit, but they're often always to bring about some kind of awakening with people. And I remember sitting down in different communities and having people tell the stories that they knew about Anansi, usually stories they were told as children from their parents, from their grandparents. And just to hear that the way that stories are passed down and the way that mythology is embedded in each of them really reminded me why I'm doing this type of work. It's stories that mean something to them and they matter.
In some First Nations culture, the heyoka or the trickster teaches to do things backwards so you can be more present in what you do. So one lesson they would teach you is like, if you always put your right leg in to the pants first, you have to start your day putting the left leg in. If you eat with your right hand, you have to eat with your left hand. And it's, again, always looking at these, the light and the shadow, the known and the unknown, the practiced and the new. I'm so excited to be talking to you about mythology while you have a baby in your belly.
Well, I actually learned something through Madeline Shaw and Suzanne Siemens, who were on the other day with Lunapads, when I was at a workshop at their studio. And I learned that when you have a child inside of you, especially if it's a girl, when it's a girl, she is given all of her ovary, all of her eggs by, I think, 14 weeks old. So right now, currently, if my daughter were to ever have a daughter of her own, she's inside of me already. So there's that connection of grandmother, daughter, and granddaughter all in one body.
Seven generations and beyond.
Yeah, exactly.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Okay. I said I was going to do something surprising. I brought with me, actually my friend Tom brought it down because I forgot it. Thank you, Tom, for going back to my apartment and getting this for me. This is a card deck. Hear that?
I do.
Yeah. I'm making these cards get ready. One of the things about mythology or storytelling circles is vulnerability, is not knowing what's going to happen next, following your heart, trusting that the universe, the unknown, the creator, creatrix, is just going to tell you what you need to know, right?
Right.
Okay, you want to play?
I do.
Okay. So I'm going to hand this deck across the roundhouse table to Megan.
Thank you.
She's going to shuffle it, and she's going to pull out a card that's going to influence. I mean, this is our first week on air. This is Friday. We made it to the fabulous Friday.
And it's beautiful here. I must say, the view of the North Shore Mountains is just it's putting a big smile on my face.
I'm so glad. It is a pretty fabulous studio, isn't it?
Yeah. Everyone should try to come down here and visit. It's you don't know it's here until you kind of pull up, and then you can't believe just how much like home it feels as soon as you walk in.
I didn't tell her to say that. She said that naturally.
I did.
And that makes me feel like she felt it, so it's real. Okay. What's the card?
Oh, I'm picking one. Okay.
You're going to pick one. Yeah.
All right.
So what is the card? This is the archetype card that we pulled today.
Hmm.
Oh, she smiles.
The rebel.
The rebel.
Yes.
Oh, the rebel.
My husband is laughing.
Everyone who knows me is laughing as well.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm just going to read. This is Carolyn Mace's. And I always thought her name was Miss, but it's Mace.
Mace.
Carolyn
yeah.
Mace. Yeah. Oh, look, this is a note from like, this must be about 15 years ago. Isn't this sweet? I just opened this box and inside it says, "Hello, goddess. the universe manifested this for you. Love, Marie-Anne, was the lady friend who gave that to me.
Beautiful.
That's my sweet moment I just shared with you. Okay, rebel, anarchist, revolutionary, political protester, nonconformist, pirate. Whether politically inclined or an artistic innovator, the rebel is a key component of all human growth and development. Helps you see past tired preconceptions in your professional or creative work, or to reject spiritual systems that don't serve your inner needs. Shadow rebel compels you to rebel out of peer pressure or for the sake of fashion, and to become mired in another manifestation of conformity. May also reject legitimate authority for the wrong reasons. Look for a lifelong pattern of rebelling against the establishment. But even if the rebel is not part of your intimate circle, you probably have it to some extent and should pay attention to it. Was that the right card for you?
Yeah, I mean, the rebel has often been a key narrative, a key archetype in my narrative, and I've had to learn how to subdue her in certain ways. But what's really interesting for me is when I work with my clients and we go through their archetypes, and if they don't connect at all with the rebel, also known as the outlaw, and yet it shows up, that's always interesting for them because they don't realize how much the rebel can kind of penetrate into our thinking. And often the way I describe it is if you're looking to do something different, if you're looking to walk the edge, if you're kind of existing on the fringes in a sense, you are calling upon the rebel. It might not be the dominant archetype. It might not be the main thing that you're focusing on. And yet it is also ever present, a quiet kind of side narrative.
Well, I think it's only perfect to play music from some rebels, don't you?
I do.
You got the silver from Rolling Stones.
We'll do it all, everything on our own. We don't need anything or if I lay here, if I just lay here, would you lie with me and just forget the world? I don't quite know how to say I said too much, they're not enough. If I lay here, if I just lay here, would you lie with me and just forget the world? Forget what we sold before we get too old. Show me a garden that's bursting into life. Let's waste time chasing cars.
I love it. That was actually Chasing Cars by Snow Patrol, but in the great universal way, Megan said, oh, that's because I studied in Scotland and they're a Scottish band, so that's why they played that one.
And while I was doing my master's in mythology, that song was the song, so you just took me back, so thank you for that.
Well, you absolutely are a witch because you made, you made a play in a good way. Good witch. I love it. Why do you think vulnerability is needed more than ever?
Oh, why is it needed more than ever? I think that we are facing challenging times. And if we continue to create the narrative for the future in a way that does not embrace the divine feminine and the beautiful vulnerability of emotion, I think that we are going to have a much harder time. I think that in looking at the way that we run our businesses and the way we run our families and the way that we're building the world around us, we really need to start to embrace both masculine and feminine vulnerability and give people a chance to awaken whatever they need to awaken to connect with each other.
The father of your child, your husband, is Swedish. Do the Swedes have a different sense about the mythological narrative in their own world? Is it more active? Is it more present? Is it more respected?
I don't think that the corporate culture that exists there is the same as the North American kind of rat race that we tend to face. I think that, you know, they get their summers off and they've just introduced a 6-hour workday, I believe. And there's a way of living, and it's more European, I think, than anything, but especially in Scandinavia, around being present, taking the time to surround yourself with family, with loved ones, to do work that, you know, is meaningful and obviously that pays the bills. And there's a practicality, especially in Scandinavia, that exists. But I do think that they are looking at the way that they want to remember their lives. And it's about togetherness and it's about, you know, equality.
I like that.
Yeah.
Togetherness and equality. Well, it's often said that the Europeans, they work to live.
Yes.
And we live to work.
That's it. Yeah.
6 hours a day, huh? That would be half a shift. And okay, Megan Sheldon, cultural mythologist and brand strategist. Her website is narrativecommunications.com. I hope you come back and pull another card and play with us again.
Oh, thank you so much, Jana. It's been a pleasure.
Really a pleasure for me, too. And now at the bottom of the hour, like we do all the time, we hit the street with our Urban Report.
I'm Trevor Jang with your Urban Report. I'm on the West End with...